Amendment number three. I'd like to introduce Margaret Spring, Chief of Staff for NOAA, who will provide some comments on the draft policy that's in your binder. Turn it over to Margaret.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hello, my name is Margaret Spring. I'm Chief of Staff for NOAA, and I've been asked to give this presentation to you. And I think the materials are in not only your binder, I think there are some on the outside. I've got Mark Holliday here with me from NIMS in Silver Spring, who's been working on the cat share policy. And I want to thank you for allowing me time in your busy agenda to have me come talk with you about the draft NOAA cat share policy. Last May, NOAA Administrator Dr. Jane Lubchenco announced the creation of a task force led by our Principal Deputy Undersecretary Monica Medina to produce a draft NOAA policy on the consideration and use of cat share programs to manage fisheries. And we released the draft of the policy on December 10th for 120 days of public review and comment. And this is a copy of it, and I think that's also on the outside on the table. My goal this afternoon is to listen to and discuss your reactions to the draft policy's goals and recommendations. This is one of several opportunities for us to hear what you like about the draft policy and what you don't like, and what you would suggest as an improvement for the final policy statement. I'll begin by providing some context of what cat share approaches to management are all about, why NOAA is interested in encouraging councils to consider them, a brief explanation of the policy development process, and a walkthrough of the main contents of the draft policy. Rebuilding our fisheries to sustain the jobs and livelihoods they support is a top priority at NOAA. Everyone at this meeting realizes this is a huge challenge given the circumstances we face today. We have made progress in rebuilding many fisheries under the Magnuson-Stevens Act, but nationwide we still have more than 20% of our fish stocks that are not rebuilt, and an even larger proportion of our fisheries are not meeting their full economic potential. This draft policy provides a foundation for facilitating council and regional consideration of cat share management. While they're not a panacea and not appropriate for every fishery, cat shares are currently in use by six councils in 14 different fisheries, where they have been used as a management tool to help realize the full economic and biological benefits of rebuilt fisheries. As our primary partners in fishery management, the councils were a critical part of the development of the draft policy, and NOAA benefited greatly from the active participation of the eight council members who served on our cat shares task force. Without their insights and experiences about cat shares, the draft policy would not be as thorough and complete. We will need the council's continued participation, understanding, and hard work. The policy is intended to provide you the flexibility and support for considering cat shares, as authorized under the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And I'll just mention that, of course, cat shares includes not only limited access privilege programs, IFQs, and community-based quotas. Regional Fishery Management Associations is a broad suite of tools that fall under the name cat share. There are pros and cons to cat shares, and no strategy is perfect. However, we are encouraging councils to consider cat shares as an option and suggest they carefully evaluate the pros and cons of cat share alternatives relative to other choices and adopt the program that has the highest likelihood of meeting the council's objectives and the national standards of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. That is why this draft policy is not a mandate. It doesn't set numerical targets. But it does encourage and support the evaluation of cat share programs as authorized under the Act. Although this is a national policy, our emphasis is on local design and implementation. Each fishery is different and affected by a range of economic, biological, and societal factors. One strength of cat shares is that they allow fishery managers a great deal of flexibility to design programs that meet specific goals. And design is a critical component of the success of these tools. NOAA's draft policy recommends the councils pay extra attention to the following. First, identify specific management goals for each cat share program. For example, eliminating overfishing, ending a race for fish, reducing bycatch, or creating socioeconomic stability for fishermen and communities. The more specific the goals, the more precisely a cat share design can be structured to attain them. After careful analysis and engagement with the fishing community and larger community, choose whether, when, and to whom to allow transfers or holding of cat shares to ensure the long-term success of the program. Specifying transferability is a delicate balancing act, as transferable cat shares promote flexibility for fishermen to plan and conduct their businesses while placing conditions on transfers, such as conditions on the size of vessel for share transfers, can help address competing goals to maintain the status quo. This requires a thorough council deliberation. Third, use cat share design options to promote sustainable fishing communities, including good jobs, preservation of wharfs, processing facilities, fuel and ice suppliers, and other coastal businesses. There are many recently added provisions in the Magnuson-Stevens Act to sustain fishing communities and small owner-operator fleets by catch shares, but to date they have been underutilized, and I urge you to look at those options. Fourth, evaluate catch share designs that would set aside shares to allow new generations of fishermen or small businesses into the fishery. Besides set-asides and proper design of initial allocation and transfer criteria, loan programs and permit banks can help assure continued fishery access in traditional ports. And development of new alternatives are always being designed in every council. Fifth, thoughtfully consider a royalty system to support science, research, and management objectives as fisheries become profitable under a catch share program. The responsibility to decide whether to collect a rental payment for private use of a public resource is reserved to the councils. And last, periodically review all catch share and other fisheries programs to gauge whether they are meeting the goals and objectives. Getting feedback on management plan performance and being adaptive just makes sense, and it's also required by law for limited access privilege programs. NOAA believes that considering catch share programs throughout the nation can help transform fisheries and ensure they are prosperous and sustainable part of our ocean and coast for present and future generations. We sincerely want your feedback on whether the draft policy is written, as written, will help us get there, and if not, what do we need to change in the policy to improve it? So with that, I'll open the floor for discussion of the draft policy. Thank you.
Any questions or comments? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, thank you, Margaret. First a question of procedure. There's a PowerPoint presentation, is that going to be given? Or
nope.
No, okay, all right. All right, well, thank
you. Is that a good thing?
Well, actually, I thought it was quite good. Anyways.
Okay.
Anyways, I give NOAA quite a bit of credit for delving into this issue in such a major way. You know, fostering debate about catch shares, obviously, we're there already, and we'll be deeper into catchier discussion as the months and the years go by. I've got a couple of points I'd like to make.
Please.
Regarding the policy, some suggestions as to how you might rework it a bit, add some information that would make it a bit more understandable and, let's say, defensible. In looking at the policy itself that was drafted after many months of work by the task force, I came to conclude that what the task force and what NOAA has really produced is an action plan. To NOAA's credit, you jumped ahead and did a lot of work regarding what needs to be done to implement a policy, if indeed it stands as written, to implement a policy that is relatively brief, shown on page... It's a short paragraph to achieve long-term ecological and economic sustainability, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a well-crafted policy, short and sweet, but again, I thought there would be more policy in it. It's action plan, which is instructive and will be of great use to us. Certainly will stimulate a great deal of debate and give this council a lot to think about as we continue to work on ground fish and sea herring and whatever else. The policy itself, the policy itself is pretty much a reiteration of the wording of the catch share task force objectives that were detailed back in June of this year. So I knew what the objectives were when I saw the policy. It took me aback a bit. I thought there'd be more substance. So I was a bit disappointed at first, especially because there wasn't much discussion or offering up of a policy that would relate to royalties. A key aspect of catch-share management that you properly identified. So, again, not a criticism. It's just that I thought there'd be a little bit more to the policy itself, but the action plan kind of told the story. So that's the first point I wanted to make. In this document, in the policy, draft policy slash action plan, there are quite a few references to the fact that it's a scientific catch share management is a scientifically proven method, and in particular, once again, the language begins to achieve long-term ecological sustainability. So again, we're getting to something that is put forth as being a scientifically proven method. And my suggestion would be that you need to make a bit more of a convincing case that it is a scientifically proven method. After reading the text, I couldn't really find the good justification for it being that. I did see a few references to other catchier programs around the world, maybe it was in the United States specifically, where the thought was that there was some science behind it, scientifically proven, but again, it didn't convince me. Actually, I thought that what your point was that it was science-based because catchier management is directly linked to the setting of science-based quotas. So I thought that was where you were coming from. Science-based quotas, therefore, scientifically based. But we can achieve, we can manage fisheries with hard quotas that are scientifically based without there being catchier management. So, again, if you would just elaborate a bit on that, it would really help your argument that scientific analyses show that fisheries managed with catchiers have demonstrated improved biological performance relative to management with traditional tools. Similarly, it would be very helpful if you would give further thought to why catchier management leads to ecological sustainability. I couldn't get it. I did not get the link between catchier management and that very important aspect of where we are going with national policy regarding fisheries management, ecological sustainability. I thought at first that your point was that one could justify it being catchier management being leading to ecological sustainability because it would result in stewardship. Catchier management would result in stewardship. And then with stewardship comes the adoption of, well, better fishing gear to minimize impact on habitat, reducing discards. Again, stewardship, reducing discards. And that certainly lends great credibility to catchier management being important for ecological sustainability. But that then led me to believe that, well, reminded me of the literature that's out there regarding what creates stewardship with catchier management. And it seems to be the establishment of rights. When fishermen have rights to a resource, then it promotes stewardship. And you very correctly detailed that rights are not being granted through catchier management. It's through permitting and it's privilege. So if you could consider, if you could add to the document to address that particular point, stewardship can be achieved with permitting and as opposed to rights. I kept coming up against that stone wall. The literature that I have reviewed indicates you get rights. If you're given rights, then you're going to have stewardship, and that's, of course, what we need, stewardship. So that would be helpful if you could address that issue. Let's see. I just got a couple more.
David, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
About that last? I just want to be clear that I have this correct. You would like us to elaborate the many ways stewardship can be achieved, including?
My understanding is that in order to get stewardship in catchier management through our world experiences with catchier management, the argument always has been and seems to continue to be that if rights are granted, then you get the stewardship. But if rights are not granted, then you have a problem getting that stewardship. So there seems to be a bit of a disconnect here by our saying, as a matter of national policy, it is a privilege, it is not a right. Then how do we make that connection with stewardship, which is so key, as you correctly identified in the policy? That's the underpinning of successful catchier management. All right. I noticed that when we get deeper into the document and we talk about action specifically, you make a case for there being a need for additional funds. additional funds, of course, for this particular initiative that would involve providing NOAA with the means to provide the different councils with experts, catch-share experts that could engage with staff, that could work with the industry in our areas. I would suggest that you give further thought to more funding for the councils to take on that initiative, as opposed to somebody being assigned to be the expert for a council or councils. The council should establish that particular expertise within its own staff. With that kind of staffing increase, I think there would be much greater input and involvement by council members in catch-share management, and there would be less reliance on NOAA to do the job for us. And indeed, you're providing good leadership, and we appreciate that. But again, funds to us as opposed to funding specific experts and other sorts of strategies that relate to a NOAA umbrella as a part of the ground, instead of the groundwork being done by the council itself. I'm very much concerned that the councils may eventually find themselves divorced from catch-share management and relying too heavily on NOAA. NOAA provides excellent guidance and services, but nope, the councils cannot divorce themselves. And I'm concerned that we're beginning to do that already with sector management by doing such things as not having anything to do with operations plans, and we give it all to the National Marine Fisheries Service to handle. I disagree with that approach, but the council decided to go in that direction. It divorces the council from communication and hard work with the industry itself, and provides just a two-way communication between the industry itself and NOAA, with the councils not being as involved as they should be. And I think, let's see. All right, I have other comments, but I'm going to hold off on them. Frankly, I'm going to put them together in correspondence. My agency, actually, is going to provide detailed comments for you to consider to make the policy as defensible as it can possibly be, and to make it and to make the action plan to make the action plan as good as it can possibly be. So, those are my comments.
Thank you very much for those really helpful suggestions, and we look forward to seeing your submission. Thanks, David.
Jim Allen.
Hi. In reviewing your why cat shares and outcome of cat shares, one of the things that the problems we've had in the multi-species fisheries here is we've fallen well short of optimum yield because of the tools of days at sea. And I would think that maybe you could have that as one of the goals and objectives to come closer to achieving optimum yield of the fisheries as a whole would be one of the objectives of cat shares.
I think, we may not have said it explicitly, but I believe the economic, I think we should be, okay, thank you, we'll do that.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Margaret, for that presentation. I've asked this question before. I'm going to do it again, hopefully in a more refined fashion. And it really has to do with the issue of allocation. And I'm being specific perhaps to something that we have gone through here with Amendment 16, but I think it's something that would be true across all of these catch share programs. We have made an allocation based on information that, in the case of allocating between recreational and commercial, information that we don't know is correct in terms of the recreational catch. And I mean, I've asked before, what do we do if once the new MRIP program gets into place and we find out that, in fact, we made these allocations based on really wrong information? In most cases, I was referred back to, you know, the review process, which says, you know, that these programs need to be reviewed every 5 years. When I read this section, I mean, it does talk about looking at the catch share programs in terms of, you know, I'm going to put it general performance metrics. And it's not really specific to the to addressing the allocation issue or readdressing it at some point in time. And I just wondered what the thoughts were on those, and is there an interpretation either under that section 303A that might address that, or is there an interpretation from NOAA that says that allocation is part of the five-year review?
Probably going to have to turn this over to Mark because I can't recall having this discussion myself. I know the review process is designed by the council, so I suppose that's one issue that could be incorporated.
Thanks, Rip. I think the policy tried to identify several steps that the councils have in front of them when they are designing fishery management programs and make the distinction between the allocation decision, what share of the total allowable catch is apportioned to different sectors. I don't want to use that, to different entities, different groups within that fishery, and then the distribution of that allocation among the members of that group. And so the initial allocation between, in the example that you've been citing, between recreational and commercial groups, the council has the prerogative and has the responsibility to figure out what are the criteria, what are the principles, and what are the objectives for making that distribution, and looking at the biological circumstances, the economic circumstances, the sociocultural circumstances. And you have the freedom and the responsibility to figure out the process and the timing of when that decision needs to be revisited over time, regardless of whether you're using catch shares or any other fishery management strategy. So the policy, when it talks about, you know, fair allocations and the section about, you know, revisiting a catch share program, it's in the context of, you know, if there are particular issues with historical catch data, those issues ought to be not just revisited after 5 years, but be incorporated into the design of the program up front. And so the policy tries to point these things out and says, if you're going to be using catch shares, you need to be mindful of what goes into the design at the outset. If historical catch or landings data are an issue, there are other criteria, there are other processes by which we can allocate, and there are not just the percentages, but the frequency. That ought to be part of the initial design and the objective to revisit that is something that councils have under their side of the responsibilities. So it's a long-winded answer, but I guess what I'm trying to point out is that when we discuss this in the task force and we try to come up with some guidance or some advice, it was, you know, allocation decisions about who gets what share of the available catch are inherent in all the different program choices that councils are making, whether they're using effort controls, catch shares, or anything else. If they're affected by the quality of the data, that has to be factored in. If they're affected by changing climate circumstances, changing world supply issues of whitefish, you know, that's going to change over time. Those are the things that will drive how frequently and how often you'd make a change in the allocation. The Magnuson Act contains some very specific, as you pointed out, some very specific timelines that says catch shares, they're a permit of limited duration for 10 years, not to exceed 10 years. They have to be reviewed by the council within 5 years and no longer than 7 years, every 7 years thereafter. So it sets up criteria for examining the entire process, and that's where we get to the idea of performance metrics that Drew was talking about earlier. How do we know, what are we setting as our measures of success? What does the council set as their vision for what these fisheries should be looking like, and how closely are we attaining them over time? So that review process feeds back into it, not just for the allocation, but for all the other objectives that you've set for this particular fishery. So catch shares, again, similar to many other types of strategies, you want to be adaptive, you want to react to how things change over time and see how closely you're meeting your goals and objectives, and to be a little bit nimble to try to adjust for that. And you decide what those criteria and what those timelines are, subject to the minimum requirements that are in the Magnuson Act for review of catch shares.
Anyone else in the council? David?
Good afternoon. Just going to read you a quick quote here. The improver of natural knowledge absolutely refuses to acknowledge authority. As such, for him, skepticism is the highest of duties, blind faith the one unpardonable sin. Said by Thomas Huxley, he was described as Darwin's bulldog. I'm the person around here who tends to bite people a little bit on cat shares, so I'll kind of warn you in advance that, you know, just so you know. And I'm not necessarily opposed to cat shares per se, but my views have hardened with the plan that we've developed because we did not, quite frankly, have this guidance. The methodology here has been described as fire ready aim. You know, we seem to have done everything kind of backwards. We wrote a plan. We set our ACLs, and then we figured out nobody gets any fish, and then we figured out we're putting all kinds of communities out of the fishery, and all the things that you give us guidance on this document or propose to give us guidance on, we haven't done. You know, we have no cap, so the fish can all migrate to three individuals basically could own it all. You need three people to form a sector. You know, we have no community protections whatsoever. At least in New Hampshire, where I'm from, there isn't a single business in this state that got enough fish to even meet their break-even costs. And on top of that, they are now going to be charged somewhere between 25 and 50% of what they catch will go to overhead. You know, paying for this catch shares program. You know, sector managers, all this monitoring that's going to go on. I mean, it's for a simple program, this has gotten awful complex, awful fast. So how I think you could improve this document, I don't have any complaints with the document itself. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that are well laid out here. But I would, if you make this policy, I would demand that councils go back and revisit their existing catch share programs and make them comply with this policy. Because otherwise in New England, in addition to a lot of lawsuits, which I guarantee are coming anyway because you're not going to have this done before Amendment 16 goes into effect, you're going to have thrown entire states out of the fishery. New Hampshire being the first one, probably. We cannot compete with the forces that are about to be unleashed here as individual small boat fishermen. There's no possible way. The other thing I'd like to see you address, because it's really not addressed in here at all, is this issue of permit banks, because that's another thing that kind of sticks in my craw for the same reason, that I've got half the fish I need. If I could somehow acquire the capital, go out and buy the other half of the fish I need to be a viable business, I've got to compete with private permit banks that are paying ridiculous sums of money that I can't possibly compete with. I've called boat brokers to see if there's any permits available in the Gulf of Maine, and there are none at any price. So there's no possible way I can make myself whole. And this goes for everybody in New Hampshire. I just use myself as an example because when I use other people, sometimes they get kind of ticked. But I'm actually one of the few people that's in a pretty good position in New Hampshire. I've fished with the same boat for 30 years. And I fish for everything that conceivably swims here. So, you know, if anybody should have been able to survive this, it should be me. But when I finally got my mailing from the government December 23rd and it said, this is what you get to catch, Merry Christmas, I looked at those numbers and, you know, it just doesn't add up. I mean, we know we needed restrictions here. We knew next year wasn't going to be pretty no matter what kind of system we used. But I think under the policy that we have chosen, the winners and the losers are vastly different under catch shares than they would have been under days at sea, number one. And number two, I think we're unleashing market forces we don't understand, which are going to consolidate this fishery like a thunderclap. And by the time the government or the council or anybody can react, you're going to be trying to take something away from people that they've already acquired, and I think that's going to be pretty hard to do. I mean, if some one person already owns more than 20% of the fishery, and we set a 20% cap, I don't think we can just take the fish away from them. Yeah, you know, I'd like to know if we could, but I don't think we can. I think we're going to have to grandfather them in. And by the time this policy is finished, that will already have happened in New England. Let me see what else did I have on my list. Well, that's enough for now. I might be back for a second bite of the apple.
Thanks, David.
Anyone else on the council? Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Margaret, for coming and speaking to us here on this policy. I represent the Marine Fisheries Division of New Hampshire. I think we're going to be meeting here shortly. I applaud the NOAA for putting together this policy. I am one that also wishes we had this 2 years ago, but it wasn't there. I wish we had our catch share workshop 2 years ago. I think it would have really helped out as we went through this Amendment 16 and developing a catch share program and helped us to avoid some of the pitfalls. I guess the two major comments that I'm going to make on this is trying to develop a catch share policy that doesn't cost the fishermen more to get in it than it is to stay outside of it. Originally, Amendment 16 has the option to stay at days at sea or go into sectors, but one of the things that makes it very difficult is the cost of monitoring. It says in your policy that NOAA will lead a collaborative effort to consider the question of when the industry and when the government should pay for the cost of observers. As I see it, in the 25 years that I've been involved with fisheries management, for the most part, states and federal agencies have been paying for the monitoring. Now, admittedly, under catch shares, you may need a little bit more intensive monitoring than we have in the past. But I still think that as stewards of the resource, and yes, the industry should also be stewards, is our responsibility. And I hope that NOAA will look within their budget to continue to provide support for the monitoring capabilities. I think that will make things a little bit more palatable to the industries that are now involved with catch shares and make it easier to move into catch shares for other fisheries. The other comment I'm going to make is in relationship to the fishing community sections of this. You know, I think this is a very potentially promising section of the policy that could be very helpful to the state of New Hampshire, which is primarily a small boat fishery, who's already lost half its fleet and one of its two co-ops because of previous regulations. And that if one of the concerns that I've heard from our sector is the catch shares going to other localities outside of New Hampshire. They want to be able to maintain that within New Hampshire, that if we're going to try and keep our small amount of catch shares that we have within our sector here and not have them go to other locations, because quite frankly, then we'll just lose our fishery. And it's a very, very important part of our economy. Our tiny 18 miles, we started off fishing cod on the Isle of Shoals back in the 1600s, and we want to maintain this. And there's a strong impetus right now to try and sell our product locally instead of shipping it to other states or other countries right now, because getting fresh fish to our seacoast community and our state is a value within our state. So out of this fishing community sustainability, it talks about in the action plan about various ways that NOAA would like to help out and provide assistance with this, and I will be looking for what the details of those assistance that you can provide to our sectors and trying to and to our fishing community to make sure that it is sustained through this implementation of catch shares with ground fish. Thank you.
Thanks for your interest in that provision. It's very important to us, too. Do you have anything you want to add to that? Okay.
Mr. Libby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one comment on the how do we fund the monitoring? I think it's important to consider who the owners of the fishery are, and they're supposed to be the people. They're also users of the fishery, processors are users of the fishery, fishermen are users of the fishery. I think we need to spread out this cost. It kind of makes me cringe every time I hear that the cost of monitoring is going to be borne by the industry. I think there needs to be a way within the catch shares or with any type of fishery to share this cost among all users, and that pretty much includes all the people. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Terry.
Yeah, thank you for coming today and speaking with us. I'm Doug's neighbor to the north from the great state of Maine, and I want to underscore the financial burdens that he outlined and the unfortunate impact of implementing catch shares in ground fishing Amendment 16 is it was in the midst of a draconian rebuilding component. And from another state that's had significant consolidation and significant loss of coastal and rural communities, any assistance that can be help us get us through the interim years would be greatly appreciated.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I also would like to thank Margaret and Mark for coming and having this discussion with us. And I think the part of the policy that I appreciated the most was the very clear identification of the program support that the agency is willing to provide to the regions. It was provided a lot of angst during the development of Amendment 16. I know it has in other regions as well. And we felt like we were doing it a little bit ad hoc, and there were many uncertainties. And I think the way that it's outlined in the policy is extremely helpful, hopefully to managers and certainly to the industry that the agency is going to provide that support. So thank you for that.
Thanks, Mary Beth.
Anyone else on the council? Dr. Pierce.
Just a couple of points. It's already been mentioned that monitoring is important, and it would be helpful if you can reference actual experiences where at-sea coverage, sea sampling coverage of fisheries that are managed for catch shares, where that coverage has been relatively low, and it succeeded. 35%, 40%, 50%. What are the examples that would enable us to say, okay, with a relatively low amount of at-sea coverage to actually monitor catch, we can be confident that the management program will be properly monitored? I look at some of the British Columbia experiences, and I see that from a number of papers and talking with people that they say everybody's got an observer on board. And that's how it works, with an observer on board. Well, clearly that's incredibly expensive, and it won't work in a small boat fishery here in New England. So, again, more examples of how less than 100%, less than 50%, how that has led to successful catch share management, accurate monitoring of catch, that would be very helpful. And then finally, your policy specifically states that NOAA encourages the consideration and adoption of catch shares wherever appropriate, and then goes on from there. Then, on page 3 of your catch share policy document, you make it clear that in order to consider a catch share program, a council should specify sufficient catch share design characteristics during the scoping and development phase of management plan development or amendment, such that stakeholders could understand potential major catch share features such as allocation and transferability and the impacts that this option will have on their operation. And then you state, well, there's no requirement that the council, in its final action, pick that catch share alternative. My point is that particular consideration seems to be, can be interpreted and is interpreted by me as an obligation. If this policy were to be adopted as stated, every council would be obliged to do this, and that would require a tremendous amount of staff time, analytical work during a scoping process to come up with all of the details that you specify here. So it gets back to my earlier point about funding, recognizing that funding is not is not without limits. If this is going to happen, then the council is going to have the specific resources to enable it to do this with every plan and amendment. And obviously, we have a lot of plans and amendments, certainly amendments. So just a word of caution to please not burden us with a responsibility, with an obligation that we won't be able to meet unless we sacrifice work on other important council initiatives.
Yeah, I just wanted to – this was an issue that we discussed during the task force deliberations about how to present this idea. There's not a requirement that every FMP have a catch share alternative that should be considered. That's up to the council. The intent here was there is such a variety of catch share programs. Catch share is this umbrella term. It means lots of different things to lots of different people. The intent behind this was to make sure that there were no surprises, that when we say catch share, that it's described in the scoping phase in enough detail that people understand what this particular alternative was going to be about. And we gave some examples of, is it going to be transferable? Is it not going to be transferable? You know, what are some of the eligibility criteria associated with the plan? So it wasn't a requirement or a mandate. In fact, you know, this is a policy. There's no force of law associated with this document. So that this was trying to provide sort of open, transparent information about what a council's alternative was considering. It was not discussed in any way as a requirement that every council amendment has to have a catch share alternative fully scoped out and evaluated before they can move forward. I just want to make that distinction and give a little context for that.
Sally.
Thank you. One of the things that New England is struggling with in implementation of groundfish sectors is data management. We talked about that a lot this morning, and I think we'll probably talk about it again this week and ongoing. And so in the policy where there's a discussion of creating a common catch share infrastructure, I feel like that's something that's really important and could benefit New England right now to learn from other regions that are dealing with huge amounts of data in a much smoother way than probably the groundfish fishery will be in the first few months of sector implementation. So once that is possible, then the information sharing is going to be very helpful. Obviously, so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel, and I assume that that's why that's included in the catch share policy. But it's something that's very real, and we're trying to deal with that now, even knowing that there are solutions out there for data management that get away from the paper environment to the electronic environment.
Anyone else in the council? Another bite, Dave?
Just a small one. It's to David's point about stewardship, and this is something that concerns me greatly because the main reason we started down this road initially is the fact that we were disgusted with the discarding issue and the trip limits and all those types of things that we had in Days at Sea. And this was full retention, no more discarding. And as a fisherman, I liked that until I got my allocation. And when your allocation isn't balanced with what swims out there, then you create just the opposite. You create this enormous incentive to be creative about not getting caught throwing back what you can't keep. And, I mean, people have been coming up to me and hurling these sheets of paper at me and going, look at this. And, you know, usually it's about the total, which is tiny. But some of them have actually got past that and looked at, hey, I only got 30 pounds of haddock. Cod and haddock swim together. How am I going to catch my cod and only catch 30 pounds of haddock? And how does this foster stewardship? So I think we need to have some kind of a discussion of that and how these programs, I think, will work really well when they match the proportion of fish that you tend to catch when you try to go fishing. I think they'll work really poorly when they don't match. And, you know, I'm not sure what the way around this is. It may be to give everybody just an aggregate number. Instead of saying you get 70,000 pounds of cod and 30 pounds of haddock and 100 pounds of white hake and go through the whole list of species, you just get 100,000 pounds. The first 100,000 you catch, that's it. You're done for the year.
That wants a stewardship, because whatever you catch, you keep it. Beautiful. I love that. But this is the way we've got it right now, where as soon as I catch that 31st pound of haddock, I'm done for the year. That doesn't sponsor stewardship. So I think you need to have a discussion about that and how we can fix that problem in our allocation formulas. In multi-species fisheries, it's not a problem in single-species fisheries, I don't think, even if you're going to use sectors for bycatch, because it's bycatch as an aggregate number. It's all the bycatch. But I think, personally at this point, I'm leaning towards aggregate allocations instead of species by species as being the solution to what I think we're about to find ourselves in New England, which is the discard hell of quotas in the 70s again.
Okay, anyone else? We'll go to the audience. Mayor Kirk?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Council, Margaret, thank you for being here. I have a couple of thoughts, and I'll submit these in writing as well prior to the close of the public comment period. My name is Carolyn Kirk. I am the mayor of the city of Gloucester, and I am also an appointee of Governor Deval Patrick on the Ocean Advisory Commission. So I've spent the last 18 months serving on that commission, advising the state folks on the ocean plan that has recently been rolled out. And in those discussions, it was stewardship, it was balance, it was development versus traditional rights, protecting the fishery. So I have a couple of comments today on the draft policy, and I want to just zero in on a few of the comments that I heard today, and I agree that this is much more action plan oriented. What it lacks is a vision to set the framework for a policy. And I think a national policy of this importance needs to have a vision associated with it that distills out the values that we are trying to accomplish through the policy. If you're in New England now, and I agree with the gentleman, David, is it, that basically this is a job elimination policy in New England. I think that's probably the last thing the administration wants to enact, which is a job elimination policy. And so when you look at page 6, which is talking about the fishing community sustainability, it touches upon the partnership between NOAA and the communities and state and local government and the council in order to provide economic development, public and private nonprofit organizations to help address the problems associated with long-term fishery and community sustainability. It's very weak in this regard, this policy. I think if we're going to have a national policy, and we have to have in the policy addressing the consequences of the policy. And the consequence in my community, the city of Gloucester, of this policy is job loss. So how do we transition? Where are the transitions? Where is the job support references in it? They may not be appropriate for this particular document, but it has to be somewhere. We have to acknowledge the consequence of the national policy and have in there how we are going to, or how the policy will address it. In Gloucester, one of the things that we wrestle with is transitioning our economy. So rather than a full and singular focus on the fishing industry, how do we diversify our economy to build on the fishing industry? How do we innovate with the resource that we do have? What is it about being a port city that we can leverage? What is a maritime economy? That is what we're trying to aspire to. And we certainly could use the assistance of NOAA and the brain power, I think, that's available to us if we can only sort of harness that and bring it together. I think the policy is very you know, solid when it comes to program and implementation and education and outreach and explanations, but it really needs to be extended. And I would challenge the Department of Commerce, and I would challenge NOAA, and I would challenge the Council to really extend your thought process to beyond measurements and to beyond, you know, counting fish, to also counting jobs and figuring out how we are going to transition to a new economy and do that very, very quickly. That is really, unfortunately, I think between now and April, I'll have some ideas, but I want to give you that feedback right now that I do think that portion, the fishing community sustainability aspects of the policy are weak, and we should make better reference to jobs, because if we have the waterfront and we have the ice company and we have the vessels and we have the infrastructure, but we have no jobs, you know, this is a failed policy, because the manifestation of the Magnuson-Stevens Act when it comes to fishing community sustainability is in our communities. And I think the next round should really make the leap in a much more direct and specific manner. So with that, I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you today.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Appreciate this.
Helen?
Thank you all very much. I'm Ellen Gaethel. I'm a biologist. My husband is sitting right over there. He's a dragger in New Hampshire. And I just had a really quick comment to make. I hope it's quick. I think that this policy is written fairly well. I'm really happy that NOAA has decided to write it. I agree with everything that's been said at the table today. I would like to see that NOAA require all the councils, once this is finished, to go back to their catch share policies and bring it into compliance with the national policy. If you do not do that, and the New England catch share system stays the way it is, this is going to be a slap in the face. This policy itself will be a slap in the face to every single small boat, family, fisherman, and crew in New England. And I feel really strongly about that. The second thing I have to say is that if the New England policy does not come into compliance with this one, with the federal one, we're going to see a biological travesty with bycatch, similar to what we had in the 70s. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Drew?
Thank you. Good to see you again, Margaret. One of the things about catch shares is they're only as good as the foundation they're built upon, and the ultimate foundation of these catch share programs are the stock assessments underlying them, and that all the allocation is based upon. And in this region, we are plagued with retrospective patterns, serious retrospective patterns, in many of the fisheries stock assessments that we're relying on. We're hearing from the Northeast Fisheries Science Center that with budget constraints, they're only able to flag some troubled stock assessments in the future, and we'll have to, you know, flag them for further work, but won't be able to actually look at them going into the future. President Obama is going to announce tomorrow a budget freeze on all non-discretionary funding, including NOAA. We're seeing an emphasis put on catch share programs. They're trying to commit funds, even in some cases here, taking funds away from cooperative research funds to fund implementation of catch shares. And it really concerns a lot of us. And to, you know, what this is, you know, no catch share program is going to work if the assessment that it's based upon is faulty. And, you know, with the retrospective patterns we have and many of the concerns that we have in this industry about the assessments, what is going to be done about the actual foundation of all of this, the brass tacks of fisheries management, the assessments? I'm just wondering if we're going to see some new commitment or something on that. I'm sure you're not prepared to talk about it this time, but I just want to raise that as a concern. Thank you.
We'll be looking at all the requirements for all of these programs and feeding that into our budgeting decisions.
Thank you.
Harriet?
Harriet Diedrichson. I'm from the Port of New Bedford. I'm a boat owner, and I own a ship chandlery that's been there since the 1937, I believe, owned by my family. And a lot of the paperwork, it looks very nice. It talks about communities, and it talks about fishermen. But in actuality, all these nicenesses go away in relation to what Drew just said. Fishing is based on allocation and areas to fish. And no matter how nice you write a paper, if there is no allocation and there is no area to fish, there is no fishing, there is no communities, and there are no jobs for those who get their jobs from fishing, like the 10 people I have at the ship chandlery when before we were up to 35 in past years. So I am glad that you come here today, because maybe it'll give food to thought for a lot of people here. As David says, he hasn't gotten much of an allocation, and he's up against people with more money no matter where it's coming from. If it's coming from Pew, Environmental Defense Fund, wherever this money is coming from, an average fisherman cannot, they can't compete with that. And these programs, they all go down to an allocation or a quota. No matter what you call it, it's an allocation or a quota. And as I understand it here, my boat's no longer dragging, so I haven't followed the dragging thing as I used to before 98. But what's going to happen here if they don't have, they're able to fish? They won't be left. The real fishermen, as soon as you come to quotas, and you say there's not enough, there's people who come in with money, businesses, and so forth, and it's no longer owner-operated, which fishing was. My grandfather fished, a Norwegian immigrant, before 1913. His brother, my father, in 1938, my uncle, 39. This was always an industry, owner-operated, and you could make a living. You worked harder, but for blue-collar, you could maybe make a little more than if you were working on shore in blue-collar. And a lot of this community, as I said, I see it and see it and see it on the paper, but it's not reality. It's like a wish list. For this to come into being, you have to, as Drew said, you have to look at the allocations and you have to look at the resource, and we have to look at it in a better way than we have. When I hear we can have 10 years of rebuilding and we choose 7 and we put pain on communities and people, why would we do that? Why would we do that if we want to support communities and that's what's happening? I guess this is what you call a lap. I've read over Magnuson quite a few times, and I've concentrated on that section, that 303, and tried to understand laps and so forth, but I haven't been able to. To me, it's a very gray area. So if what they've done here at the council with Amendment 16 is a lap, I see here you talk about no excess shares. I don't know if that's been addressed. So I find it hard that you've got people going along and mandating federal permits, but they seem to be on 2 roads, and they don't seem to know what's going on the adjacent road. The main thing is that there's been a lot of people making money directly fishing and out in the community indirectly, the tires for the trucks, the people cleaning the bathrooms, the guys shoveling the ice. We now know in the Boston Fish Pier they no longer even have an ice plant. They're trucking the ice from New Bedford. Boston, one of the biggest fishing ports before. There's something wrong. There is fish. And this is where we have to start, as Drew said. You have to have allocation area to fish. I think things have to be looked at closer, and you have to look at the people and the fishing people. This never was a big business. This was a business for hardworking people to make more for their family. To make it something that it never was is not a reality. But to keep it a good income for for the coastal communities and for many people to make a good living. It can happen, but there has to be an attitude change. I thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Eric?
Good afternoon. My name is Eric Anderson, fisherman from New Hampshire. I'm not going to try and, you know, be redundant with some of the statements I think that have been made here. But it's an observation. I think it's an observation you should take away, at least from this meeting, that you're here presenting a policy issue with regards to a catch share program. And I think it's relatively important that there's alignment. There is a cohesive alignment with the policy and the transition into the regulatory regime, which is what this council represents. I don't see that clearly here now from what people have said and what people I think have a sincere interest in expressing. And I think that should be some type of take-home message for wherever you're going to, you know, take the concerns of this, you know, geographic area into consideration. The policy is the policy. It's been a top-down mandated type of policy that has come from the top and filtered down. And it's, I don't want to really share my comments or my beliefs of it, but, there has to be some coordinated integration. Because what's represented in the regulatory concerns of the Amendment 16, which is, you know, the enormity and the magnitude of this transition, I think is unfolding every day within the community that's trying to understand how this policy is unfolding into a regulatory action, unfolding into the economic consequences that everybody is starting to realize. I'm not sure that everybody was clear. And there was complete transparency in that discussion as the amendment started to materialize, and it is what it is right now because we're in a public comment period. You still even have to admit that, you know, just for alignment purposes between policy and regulatory action, we seem to be in a little bit of a, you know, unique situation that the public comment period for the policy is going to end as the regulatory actions of the amendment are at the doorstep of implementation. And I think there's some legitimacy in that concern, at least amongst the communities that are going to be, that are, you know, starting to recognize the unfolding consequences of the amendment. That's a distant view of it because the closer you step toward the actions, it unfolds differently amongst the many communities that are going to be affected. You know, and I think our concerns as a community here within New Hampshire are not any less or any more unique than what's unfolding in other smaller communities. You got to take that message home. You really have to take that message home and put some alignment, sensibility into what you're trying to create as a policy. And so it equitably translates into something that's cohesive and livable and makes sense within the people that it's affected by. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Anyone else in the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Anything further from the council? Okay, Margaret, I think you've gotten I got 3 pages of notes, so I think you
gave me a workout. I'm definitely taking a lot of this home back to Washington, and I'm sure we'll be seeing all of you at some point in my travels as well as in yours. Thanks very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's the end of today's agenda, so tomorrow we'll come back at 8:30 a.m. Scallop Framework Adjustment 21. 8:30 tomorrow.